Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Beautiful day outside, Chris Canty. And it sounds now like maybe we're inching closer towards the start of sports, doesn't it?
Dave, you took the words right out of my mouth. The governors of the state of California, Texas, and our own New York have all talked about professional sports being able to resume at some point in the near future. They're talking about how they're going to be open for business, ready and willing partners. And Dave, I've got to take away from that when you have the federal government with the president talking about trying to get sports that going up, and then you have the governors also echoing the same sentiments, that it's going to happen at some point in the near future.
Yeah, I think we said this for the last couple of weeks. At a certain point, between the commissioners having meetings with President Trump, that at some point each of these states would deem that getting sports back was going to be considered essential business. And I think we're getting to that point now, especially because it's California and New York
right.
that have opened up.
Well, that was kind of surprising to me because I've had a feeling that California and New York were going to be the last ones to jump on board. You'd see, you know, the Texases and the Floridas and the Arizonas of the world. But no, it's great. The fact that, you know, Cuomo comes out and says it, Newsom comes out and says it. I think June 1, California says they would be allowing the teams to start playing professional sports. So it doesn't feel like we're all that far off. It does feel like we're making trends in the right direction right now.
Yeah, I just don't understand. We have to get somebody on. I don't know who that is. Maybe Mike T will have some answers because he's worked in front offices. I just don't know what – someone needs to clarify to me what the financial benefit is for not just the state. I'm sure that has something to do with taxes and taxing player salaries and everything else. But revenues for the sport. I mean, again, you have sports like baseball that, you know, give you 40% of their revenue is attendance, is gate. I mean, wouldn't you, again, it's great that your city or, your state wants to have the stadium open, but if there's no chance in hell that if you're in, you know, New York State, that you're going to have the ability to have fans in seats, no, that's great. Thank you for the gesture, but wouldn't you rather put games somewhere where you think, you know, over the next couple months, you're going to have fans in seats? That's what I need clarification on.
On why you wouldn't try to push it towards a state that's easier to have it done at?
Yeah, like I appreciate the fact that the state is open, but if the state is going to be open and there's really no chance that I'm going to have the opportunity to have fans in seats as opposed to if I played my games in my spring training facility, where again, I mean, it's not, I can't have the same kind of attendance, which you're not going to have anyway, but at least the opportunity to have people in seats at some point will exist. I would lean towards that because at least you're making money. I mean, you're not making any money outside of the TV money. If you stay here and play the entire season with no fans.
Well, you're looking at that from the owner's perspective, but I don't think you're considering the state's perspective because you hit the nail on the head. You're talking about taxable income. That's tens of millions of dollars, if not hundreds of millions of dollars for those states with those professional athletes playing in them. Like if the professional athletes are playing in the different states, well, that's revenue for the state that they're playing in, not for their home state, not for where that team's fan base is. And if you're a governor, Can you justify the decision not to try to be a partner with these professional clubs when you recognize the potential windfall that it could mean for your state when everybody is struggling economically?
No, I understand what you're saying, but I'm saying I'm speaking as if I was one of the owners of the if I was the Wilpons or the Steinbrenners. It's great that you opened up my stadium, but let's be honest with what we're dealing with here in New York. I mean, what are the real, like, what are the realistic chances that we're going to have
slim.
People?
You're not going to have it, but again, if you're the owner, you've got to deal with the PR of that too. When the state says, yeah, we want you to be able to play your games here. We want you to be here, even though we can't have any fans. If you decide that you're going to set up shop somewhere else, I mean, that's one of those things that you've got to try to navigate if you're an owner because fans are going to be able to put two and two together and you know there's going to be political pressure if you don't give them the benefit of being able to have that taxable income from players.
Yeah, but I think it speaks to, I mean, you're right. I mean, if the owners wanted to make the argument that it would make more sense to be in, you know, in Florida, I mean, they could make a great argument. I think that's, well, I mean, well, just goes back to, you know, all the different you know, hurdles that you're going to have to jump over to try to get this thing restarted.
Yeah, there are a lot of logistics that you're going to have to go through until we actually have professional sports, team sports back up and running. I mean, you just talk about from the medical standpoint, there's a lot of protocols, there's a lot of procedures that have to be put in place and a lot of, you know, a lot of moving parts. So yeah, it's exciting when you start to hear the attitudes of the people that are ultimately going to be in charge of giving the okay for sports to resume. There's some optimism that they've seemed to soften their stance in terms of when that's actually going to happen. But in terms of implementing all the things that it's going to take to keep the professional athletes safe, it's a completely different thing. And I think we recognize how hard it's going to be. But I mean, as far as where the teams are actually playing, look, the fans just want to see team sports. We just want the distraction. We just want something to get us closer to the normal that we knew before COVID-19. And I think the news that we got yesterday is a step in the right direction, no doubt.
Absolutely. Now, no fans right now from New York, Texas, and California, but the first step is pro sports is allowed to resume, and that's huge. I mean, we've been waiting for this news for the better part of 2 months right now. So, again, we don't know where the games are going to be played. We don't even know if the games are going to be played, but it is the first crack to show us that we are in fact, heading in the right direction, and that's big news.
Yeah, it's big news, but it just, I mean, for me, it's just so transparent. I mean, when you all of a sudden have, like, you know, you have the University of Florida, or you have the state of Florida saying, you know, if professional teams aren't allowed to play in their states, we're open for business. And then all of a sudden, you know, you snap your fingers and you got, you know, California in New York saying, okay, we'll be open. You know, our teams can play with no fans. I mean, it's obvious. You're doing it because it's, you know, for your financial gain. Like we all understand it's about, at the end of the day, it comes down to the money involved.
But that's no small thing though, Rico. Because they're talking about the economy shrinking at the greatest rate since 2008 housing bubble crisis. Like, that's what they're expecting for the second quarter of this year. And so when you start talking about upwards of 35 million Americans not having a job, every little bit of revenue that you can generate for your state, if you're a governor or you're a state politician, that means something. And professional sports represents a big chunk of you know, revenue that they could use to get their local economies back up and running. So I don't think it's a small thing. And I absolutely believe that what the governors of California, Texas, and New York did yesterday was in response to what DeSantis did in Florida last week. To me, there's no doubt about it that that's actually what's going on. Like, they are feeling the pressure from the people in their states to get things back up and running, and sports has to be a part of it. Sports has to be a part of the economic recovery for this country.
You're not wrong. I mean, I agree with what you're saying. It's just, again, at the end of it, we're sitting here talking about player safety and health and the health of, you know, the people in these states. When push comes to shove, it does become about dollars and cents. It becomes,
but everything does, doesn't it? I mean, really, honestly, bottom line, almost everything at some point becomes dollars and cents.
No, it does, but it's all of a sudden, like, and now that you announce this, now all of a sudden you put the pressure back on the owners of the sports teams in your state. Because now it's like, okay, the state is open. Well, what does that mean? It means I can have games at my stadium, but I can't have fans. Well, is that necessarily in my best interest? Probably not. What's in my best interest is to go to a state or play in a state, if it's a possibility, which it would be for the Yankees and Mets, where I'm much closer to having the ability to have people in seats, which makes me more money and makes my players more money. It makes our league more money as opposed to, you know, catering to the state.
You're not wrong, Rick, but here's the other side of that coin. And I'm not saying this is the case with all professional sports teams, but it is with a lot of them. Those stadiums and those arenas that they play in are partially funded by public money. So here's your opportunity as the organization to give something back to your local economy, your state economy. We recognize that it would probably be in the best interest of your bottom line if you played in one of those states that was closer to having fans in the actual venues when the games are taking place. But this is not just about you. How much have we said that the last couple of months about sports getting back started? It's not just about the athletes. It's not just about the owners and the businesses. It's about doing something that's in the best interest of this country. And resuming team sports and having these teams play in their home stadiums, home arenas, that is really what's in the best interest of everybody involved.
It just sometimes, I'm just, sometimes some of these conversations and some of, you know, what happens in just big business and sports, it just rubs me the wrong way because you end up talking out of both sides of your mouth. I mean, you're right. I think, you know, I'm right. I mean, yeah, it becomes, okay, you know, I'll scratch your back, you scratch my back. Like, you know, you're helping pay for these stadiums, so I'll do you a solid, and then maybe you, you know, you give me a tax break here or whatever it ends up being. I mean, you're leveraging both sides. When, I mean, if truth be told, the main focus was, let's be as safe as humanly possible and make as much money for our sport and our players as humanly possible, that there is a plan that should be in place. And
but
that plan
know
would
that,
be...
You know that's not what it is, though, Rick.
I know.
You know
I know.
That's
so
not
so let's
is.
Stop pretending. So let's stop pretending then. Let's stop faking it. Let's just be transparent. Let's just be real about it. I mean, the plan that would be the safest and make you the most money would be have, you know, the original plan, where we have half the teams in Arizona and we have half the teams in Florida.
Yeah, for baseball, that makes all the sense in the world.
Exactly right. Because now at least you can control it. Now it's a, I mean, now it's fair for everyone involved, as opposed to now, you know, I'm a team traveling, getting in a plane, going on the road, being sequestered at a hotel where the home team can do whatever the hell they want. Yeah, we suggest that you don't go. Oh, come on, man. So now I'm trusting that when you're in your home city that, you know, you're going to do all the right things, and then I'm going to be standing at first base next to you, not knowing where the hell you've been, but I've been stuck in this hotel because that's what I'm, because they can actually keep an eye on me in my hotel. It's ridiculous.
When you start talking about the expanded rosters, there's no way that you're going to get 1,000-plus baseball players all to do the right thing and to take the proper precautions to keep everybody safe.
No chance.
That's just not going to happen. That's not reality. But again, it's not, this is not about the safety and well-being of the athletes as much as it is about trying to get things back on track financially for the organizations and for the country. That's what it is. I mean, listen, back in 2011 when we had the lockout, we actually had the benefit of having training camp at the Giants facility rather than having to go up to SUNY Albany for a couple of months. I mean, when you have the opportunity to sleep in your own bed or sleep in a hotel bed rather than a dorm room bed, I can't tell you the difference that makes for a professional athlete in terms of performance. And then being able to have all the equipment at your facility rather than relying on the equipment at a college gym, it's a completely different ballgame. But the players then realized the reason why we had training camp up in SUNY Albany was so the state of New York could tax us for those days, and they get a prorated portion of our salary for the entire year, even though we weren't making our salary during training camp. So think about that, Dave. You're making $1,000 a week at training camp.
Yep.
But the state of New York can tax you based on the salary that you make for that given year, for the amount of days that you spent practicing in that state.
Diabolical.
So that was the owners of the Giants doing the state of New York a solid, because we didn't have to have training camp at SUNY Albany. If you ask any player on that Giants team, would you rather have training camp 2 hours away in Albany, or would you rather have training camp at the Giants facility? Every player would say, we'd rather have it at the facility. But that's not the reality of the situation. It's big business. And you recognize the politics that are involved, the money that's involved, in trying to make sure that you're doing what's in the best interest of the whole. I just point that situation out to say this. Right now, we recognize that it's probably in the athlete's best interest to go to one of those other states and try to reopen and resume sports. But when it comes to baseball, I don't think that that's going to happen, just because there's other politics that are involved, and it makes sense for some of these local economies to have those sports teams play in their home states rather than somewhere else.
Yeah, but Chris, SUNY Albany was team bonding. Hmm. It was an opportunity to get you guys all together, and
they must have been great mattresses up there for you guys.
Yeah,
terrific mattresses.
That's why everybody's back was locked up.
Yeah, I'm sure.
At least you didn't get raffle tickets to pay for dinner like we did when we had training camp.
Are you serious?
What do you mean raffle tickets?
Yeah, instead of per diem, we got raffle tickets.
So you didn't know what you were going to get when you walked up there?
No, like you used to go, like we used to have training camp in, like we had it in Nova Scotia. Like we have, like there was places in Canada that would reach out, they would pay for our training camp. So we would go there. And instead of per diem, there were a couple of years where we legitimately got an envelope of raffle tickets. And we're like, what the hell are we supposed to do with these raffle tickets?
So every ticket was good for a different piece of food?
It was like for a restaurant. Yeah, like it was the understanding that you went to a restaurant and for one of your meals, you just take one of your raffle tickets and you'd...
Oh my God. At least you got to go to a restaurant. We got to go to a college cafeteria.
Yeah, but I'm thinking the college cafeteria that was set up for you guys was probably better than the restaurant they were at.
Dave, I don't know about that. It's the same cafeteria that the other students go to.
Raffle ticket sounds so...
Raffle ticket sounds like a roll of the dice, though. You're right.
Yeah. What can I get a steak sandwich here?
Yeah, we're like, well, how do we tip? Do we like? Do we give like an extra raffle
couple
ticket
extra
for
tickets?
A tip? Like, what do we do here?
Then the waiter can eat.
I'm going to give you 20% of this raffle ticket.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to rip this right here. Oh my God!
I knew I was in trouble when they were serving pizza for lunch and it was the square pizzas. That's when you know you're in trouble.
Yeah, you were a college student, is what you were.
I was a college student that was playing for an NFL team.
Yep, back to the days of Virginia football. All right, 800-919-3776. Of course, Mike Tenenbaum at the 11 o'clock hour today. He'll help us go around the NFL a little bit. Cuddle, marry, trash at 12:15. Today, Nobservations, 12:30 as always. Got to get to this LeBron James conversation. RJ Barrett with some words as well. Let's start to get to some of our calls. I'll go to Ira in Staten Island. Ira, you're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, good morning, Dave. Good morning, fellas. How are you?
We're all right. What's going on?
Good. Everything's good, thank God. You know, Chris, you're 100% right. It's all about the economics, you know, for everybody across the board. And they got to try to do it in the safest way possible. But, you know, I want to go, you were talking about fans in the seats. Listen, maybe some states can do it, okay? But I don't see where the East Coast cities are going to be able to do it this year unless there's a vaccine. And you know what? You can't have some states that are allowing fans, whatever sport it might be. I think football is the biggest home field advantage. And so, like, you can't go to Green Bay and you have 30,000 people in the stadium to go to, and you're not allowed to have fans there. So it's either all in or all. And as for camp, I know you just, once again, I know it's about, but, you know,
now we're kind of losing Ira, but we get the point. He's saying it's got to be equal footing or completely. I mean, you can't have 30,000 people going to Green Bay and then MetLife Stadium has zero, can you?
Yeah, you can.
You can?
Yeah, I mean, that's still about the bottom line. I mean, all that money's still going into the pie that you're splitting up between the owners and the players.
Yep.
You're just going to say, no, we don't want that money? Of course they want that money. Stop.
Well, I'm sure they want the money, but it's kind of unfair that the Packers now get a home field advantage and other teams don't.
Life's not fair, Dave. And that's what it comes down to.
So that's what this is going to be. However they can make the most money and fairness can go out the window for this.
That's what it always comes down to.
Yeah.
That's what it always comes down to. Listen, here's the thing I was thinking about this morning is when you start looking at all these sports, right, and we'll see what happens. I mean, we had some good news yesterday with a possible vaccine and everything else. But, I mean, you're listening to, you know, heads of colleges come out now and talk about it's a foregone conclusion that – you know, these athletes will get COVID, and then, you know, how we quarantine them, how we treat them, that's going to be the bigger issue. I think hockey probably, I mean, hockey may come back the soonest, in all honesty, the way the way it's trending right now at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as hockey players, basketball players, baseball players, and football players, the foregone conclusion that, you know, guys will get sick, if I was a football player, I would probably be the most concerned. Like, if I was Chris Canty's size, if I was a defensive lineman or an offensive lineman at my size, I mean, isn't that the definition of underlying health risk?
It is, Rico. I mean, you got to think that the NFL Players Association is a little bit concerned about, you know, what it actually looks like when the guys get back to training camp and when we start ramping things up for the regular season. I saw a report that said the NFL is exploring different face masks to try to include new safety measures to protect players from transmitting the virus if one of them happens to be infected while they're playing a game. But, I mean, I just – you have to be worried about it simply because of the duration and the proximity you are to the other competitors in the sport. So, yeah, I would be worried about it, especially when you're a big guy, when you could potentially have an underlying health situation that you're not aware of, and it could potentially affect you adversely in comparison to somebody else that's playing the game. So, yeah, you absolutely have to be worried. But, I mean, I think that all the players, all the athletes are concerned because nobody really knows how it's going to affect them in comparison to how it could affect somebody else. So, yeah, I think it's something that football players are concerned with, but I think all athletes are concerned about it. Now, there are varying degrees, but, I mean, this is – This is a scary proposition, man. I don't think this is just one of those things that athletes are looking like and saying, yo, well, this is similar to the flu. I'm not worried about what's going to happen to me if I get the virus. I think a lot of guys are worried about what getting the virus would mean and what would be in place in order to protect them from being able to what would protect them and keep them away from contracting that. I think this is a much more serious issue than people actually think for athletes.
I don't think what could you possibly do? Like, let's just say, for example, football starts and there's no vaccine or anything else. Like, we're in the same situation. We know more about this, but it's, you know, you get it and, you know, fingers crossed because you're in good shape, you get through it, right? Like, that's where we're at. You got baseball talking about if there's no chance you're going to get in the game or if you're not, you know, vital to what's going on, you can't even sit in the dugout, you're going to sit in the stands, socially distance. How, in God's name, could you ever possibly social distance in football?
You can't.
Between the huddle. You can't.
You can't do it. I mean, think about the game. The game is one huge man against another, and they line up against each other, and they smash into each other. So you can't
distance. But even when there's no action going on, you still have to, you're not going to social distance in a huddle.
And of course
you're still on top of each other in a huddle.
Of course not. And what's the goal? The goal is to get to the quarterback and get on top of him and get as close to him as you possibly can.
And the quarterback's not going to put his hand in his mouth.
I don't know if I like the way you put that, Dave.
Well, that's the goal.
Yeah, I mean, the goal is to impose your will on another man, and it's violent, it's aggressive, and it's physical, and that has to be the concern because you're going to be close to other guys, and if one guy has the virus, then chances are that a lot of players on the team are going to get it, and a lot of players that on the team that you're competing against are probably going to get it. So yeah, that has to be a major concern about football because with baseball, it's, you know, I'm not going to say that they're completely safe, but I mean, you're not as close to all of the guys on the other team as you would be in football. You're just not.
It's safer.
The nature of the game lends itself to you being a little bit safer.
Of course.
So, I mean, that's a major hurdle that football has to cross. Now, I know that the NFL is talking about teams opening up facilities and getting certain staff members in there and having certain employees come in there, and they're going to try to set up bubble-like environments. But I guess my thing is this. When you get the actual players back in the building, how are you going to be able to keep them all safe? Like, that's a huge question mark because you're talking about 90-man rosters right now, and that's across 32 teams in the NFL. So that's relying on a lot of guys to do the right thing, similar to the conversation that we had with baseball. And I just don't know that's something that you can book. So if you know that at some point you're going to have to be able to deal with one of these guys testing positive for it, are you going to have the measures in place to protect everybody else in the organization?
But we don't know. I mean, that's the truth. They can say that they do. They'll put, you know, measures in, but look at what baseball just did. Baseball just came out with this 70-page rule book of what you're allowed and not allowed to do.
And that's going to be impossible to enforce
right,
all that stuff.
Right, that's my point. You think that's going to be adhered to? I mean,
yeah.
No fighting, which is almost comical. It's like you get hit in the head. It's like, all right, well, let me take
no
a moment
spitting,
here. I'm not allowed
Dave.
To.
No spitting.
No spitting, no patting someone on the back. No
I don't mind that
gloves.
Rule. I don't mind that rule.
What?
The no spitting. I don't mind that.
Yeah, but it's
you, you think they're not continue. Somebody, one player is not going to spit? The entire year?
I'm just saying, they probably will.
No, but you already seen it. I was watching some of the Bundesliga. Like, the guys can't help it. Like they can't. I mean, they're still, you know.
Well, it's ingrained as
hugging,
an athlete.
They're still hugging
you
and high-fiving.
Things.
Even the KBO. Big win by the Dinos today, by the way. 11-1, just so you know, Dave. First place currently.
11-1?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
5-4 today. But even them. I mean, they're still high-fiving and everything else.
But that's what they used to do.
I mean, you can put as many rules as you want in place. I mean, you can put as many rules as you want in place. Yeah, at some point, a pitcher is going to put his fingers in his mouth. It's just going to happen. To get extra grip on the ball, he's going to do just because it's a force.
Right, so think about that. His fingers go into his mouth, onto the ball. Ball gets hit. Shortstop fields it, throws it to first. That same ball. Now, the first baseman has it on his hands. Shortstop has it on his hands, and it can get spread very easily.
But it actually makes the tracing that much easier. You just go back and look whoever's scoring the game Okay, so the pitcher's got it, and it was a ground ball to short. Okay, so
that's
a short stop. It's a 6'3", so we're going to have him.
Yeah. All you got to do is listen to the play-by-play guy. He'll tell you everybody.
He'll be home.
He'll tell you everybody that's coming.
He'll be safe.
He'll be safe.
He'll
player.
Have no concerns. He'll have no concerns whatsoever. Man.
The biggest thing, because, again, sports is going to come back. There's too much money involved. Sports is going to come back. The NHL will come back. The NBA will come back. Baseball will find a way to figure all this out, and they'll get back and play. I mean, it's going to come down to, we'll pretend like it's safe and everything else, but what you need to avoid at all costs is having this, like a flu sometimes or a stomach virus sometimes, where it just goes straight through the team and you can't control it.
Yeah.
And now you have, like that could, which, I mean, at least the speed of baseball and just, I mean, positions and it's just, there's a lot more controllables. Like football, there's no control. Like I could see of all the sports, like it flying through a football team much quicker than it went through one of these other sports leagues.
Yeah. But maybe, Rick, that's why baseball is considering actually having the players play at their home stadiums. Just because of the nature of the game, it makes it a little bit harder than, say, basketball or football to have the virus run through a team. Maybe that's what they're thinking in their heads. For me, when you start talking about the logistics and the travel and all of the different people that will be involved with supporting the team, I think you put yourself at a much greater risk if you have everybody in their home stadiums rather than centralizing your operations in a couple of different states. Like, I like the NBA's plan, considering Las Vegas or Orlando as the place where they're going to have the season resume and having all the teams that are going to participate play, and you create kind of a bubble-like atmosphere. I like that idea.
NHL will be the same thing.
Because at least you can have a couple of checkpoints and you can have precautions and protocols that other people will be around to enforce to keep the players safe. You know what I'm saying? With baseball, it feels like with their plan, you're relying on the individual athlete to make the right choices 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I just don't know that that's going to happen when you're talking about 1,000-plus players.
Let's go to Dan and Merrick. Dan, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Been trying to call when I can. Just so you know, I'm at the vet with my cat. So if the vet comes back out, I'm going to have to split. Apologize for that.
All right. We appreciate the update. You know, what's wrong with the cat?
Yeah. Well, you know, he was gaining weight because he's a fat cat. His name's Lou. And then we tried to put him on a diet, and he started losing too much weight, which if you have pets, you know that's the number one sign. So we've been taking him back and forth every couple of weeks, checking his weight and all that. Appreciate the concern, though.
Oh, a lot of concern,
But But you know, I think it's great with the governor saying sports can come back, and I get, you know, Cuomo and the other states saying they want him in that state. Maybe some kind of deal can be made if they go play in Florida. The original states can still tax the players' income, even if they're not playing the state. Remember, Florida doesn't have income tax. You know, so that way Florida can get fans in, which I don't agree with. I don't think fans should be in any state, but it is what it is. You know, because I agree. I don't think sports teams want to piss off their own governors. I think that's going to have some, you know, bad mojo later on. But what do you guys think about that?
Well, I don't think you're wrong. I mean, I think that's part of it. I think it's, I mean, and Chris has already kind of mentioned this. I mean, you know, between having, you know, your stadium's funded. I mean, you know, they're not all privately owned. I mean, you get help from your state to build the stadiums and everything else. Yeah, that's an important relationship.
And, yeah, it is.
Like that's a relationship that, you know, professional sports teams owners want to necessarily mess around with.
Not at all. Not at all. But good luck trying to get the states to negotiate tax revenue.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably not going to happen. But I will say this, even though Florida and Texas are no income tax states, I mean, you still get the benefit of having all of those athletes there, which is going to generate revenue for your economy because those athletes have to be supported. So if you're DeSantis, I mean, that's a huge win if you were able to lure professional sports teams that can't play in their home cities because of the local ordinances. So, I mean, this to me, what happened yesterday with those three governors, I mean, I think that's in direct response to what the governor of Florida said last week. I mean, I don't think that that's a coincidence, Dave. I mean, the fact that you have this...
Florida talks about being clear, opening up, and now other states are right on the heels of that.
You think that's a coincidence?
No.
No, it absolutely isn't. It's a reaction, but I think that those are the results of those governors in California, in Texas, and in New York feeling the pressure financially from all of their constituents. That's a real thing, man. I mean, what's happening in this country and what's happened to our economy, I mean, it's nobody's fault, Dave, but we all have to be a part of the solution in terms of getting things back turned around and getting the ball rolling in the right direction. And professional sports has to be a big part of that.
So have you felt like, and I've kind of felt like this, that people are, I don't want to say anti-LeBron, but because Jordan was portrayed as such a larger-than-life figure, that LeBron has been getting some, I don't know if negative press is the right thing to say, but just like it's all Jordan, then LeBron is secondary at this point.
But why wouldn't LeBron be secondary at this point? I mean, he's not playing games, and you're watching.
I understand
the last
that, but it's like everyone is because a few months ago, you're much closer for LeBron to be the guy that people thought was the greatest of all time, and now you watch this documentary, and it's all Michael Jordan.
Which was exactly why it was released.
Of course. Yeah. Is exactly what Michael Jordan wanted.
And by the way, that whole poll that they did, the 600 people that they polled, I mean, the most fugazi poll of all time. Okay? Embarrassment.
Well, why were you so bothered by it?
I mean, Jordan won everything. Better passer.
17, right?
Ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's just, you can't even take it serious.
Yeah, I can't take that serious. Michael Jordan is a better passer than LeBron James. I don't see it that way. But maybe that's just me.
Yeah, no, that's not just
but
you.
Think of
that's
your prisoner of the moment. You just watched a documentary on how great Michael is. You saw him win. You saw everyone, you know, bow at his feet. He wins championship after championship. Everyone says it's the greatest thing they've ever seen. And then you put a poll out about who's better, him or LeBron with these things. Of course it's going to be Michael.
Well, yeah, you're going to have a recency bias. But I guess I look at it from the standpoint that I don't know that LeBron James could ever be in position to eclipse Michael Jordan. Without Michael Jordan, LeBron James wouldn't be possible. I mean, Kobe Bryant talked about it in the docuseries in one of the earlier episodes. He says, I mean, people compare me to Jordan, and they try to say that, okay, this part of my game or that part of my game is better than Jordan. And he said, all of the things that they're talking about, I got from Jordan. Like, Jordan made it possible for Kobe Bryant. Jordan made it possible for LeBron James. Jordan globalized the game of basketball, but he also established the blueprint on how an individual player can brand himself and monetize that brand in a team sport. We hadn't seen that before in the NBA before Michael Jordan. We really hadn't seen that in professional sports before Michael Jordan, not at that level. So, I mean, when you start talking about the success that LeBron James has had on and off the court and other athletes in today's NBA, like, a lot of that has to be attributed to Michael Jordan. So, again, I come back to the greatness of Michael Jordan, to me, can't be eclipsed by LeBron James. The best that LeBron James can hope for is trying to tie this situation. I don't think that LeBron James can ever be bigger or considered a greater basketball player than Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I think he'd be hard-pressed. At this point, I think he'd be hard-pressed, especially now that this younger generation has had a chance to watch The Last Dance,
right,
and actually see it for themselves. Because everything gets sensationalized, right? You know what I mean? When you start hearing the stories, and then all of a sudden, I mean, all the stories your dad told you about Michael Jordan, how great he was, you get a chance to watch with your own eyes. And then to see the teams he beat, I mean, the likes of Bird and Magic and the Detroit Pistons team, and then, you know, the Utah Jazz with Malone and Stockton, and you get a chance to see it and the kind of competitor that Jordan was, and, you know, some of the nuggets about, you know, Jordan sneakers and him being one of the first, you know, him being the first basketball player to, you know, to have his own signature sneaker, and how many, you know, they were expecting to sell, you know, 3 million in the first, you know, hopefully, what they say, 3 million?
I think it was 3 years.
Yeah. That's what they do, like 100 and something million?
Yeah, in the first year, in his right. rookie year. Yeah. So, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, he's become in the NBA, maybe in sports in general, like he's the gold standard, man. I mean, he's what you're striving to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no one. I mean, who's even next up when it comes to that? Tiger was up there for a while.
Yep.
Yeah, but Tiger's not the unquestioned best in his sport of all time.
No.
I would agree with that.
I mean, Jordan is the unquestioned, like the best of the best.
They say he's the best. Like other exactly. players that are in the top five conversation, best basketball players of all time, they say that Michael Jordan was the best and is the best. Even with LeBron James now being on the scene for the last decade and a half. Now, that's not to take away from LeBron James. I mean, he came into the NBA with the pressure of trying to live up to the standard that Michael Jordan set.
And he has.
I mean, LeBron James on most people's list is number two. And that's not all bad. I just, when you start having a conversation about who was the better player. To me, competitive greatness has to come up. And Michael Jordan, who never let an NBA Finals series get to a game seven, that to me means something. Being at your best when your best is required. We have not seen LeBron James dominate at the NBA Finals level like Michael Jordan did. Now, that's not to say that LeBron isn't amazing. He went to eight straight NBA Finals. I mean, Rick jokes around and talks about LeBron being the 31st franchise in the NBA. So, I mean, LeBron James is a special, special player. And there are some things that I think he does at a higher level than Michael Jordan ever did. But I just think when it comes down to it, when it comes to, you know, being your best, when your best is needed, Michael Jordan always answered that call. I mean, the flu game is case in point. I mean, seeing what happened to him, the food poisoning, doesn't make excuses, on the fence as to whether or not he'd play. Phil Jackson didn't know. His mom didn't know. He still goes out there and drops 40-something points.
He always did. That's the thing. It's like a larger-than-life figure. He always, always did. Whatever the biggest moment was the best version you got of Michael Jordan.
Oh, he didn't always.
Almost always.
No, exactly right, though. I mean, the good far outweighs the bad. Like, he gave you so much of the good that you're willing to overlook.
I mean, can you think of bad?
No, not bad, but I mean, there was failure. I mean, he didn't hit every last second shot. Like, every big shot he didn't make, every free throw he didn't make.
Every one, but I mean, over the course of a series, he wound up hitting enough for the most part that they're going to win that series.
Exactly. There's been so much great that you don't have to, I mean, there's no time to sit and focus on the bad, because the good far outweighs the bad.
I mean, he did it in 82. He did it in 84. He did it in the NBA. He did it in the NBA Finals. He did it in 92 for the Dream Team. I mean, he always did it.
And that's why he's the best.
Exactly. Exactly.
And when you state your intentions, too, I think that's part of LeBron's problem, too, is that he stated his intentions. I mean, you know, chosen one on his back and everything else, that he was trying to catch the ghost. He was trying to catch Michael Jordan. It's like the old adage, right? To, you know, when you're trying to, you know, beat the champ, if it comes down to, you know, if it's close, the champ will get the benefit of the doubt. Like, it's got to be, like, if it's going to go to a decision, usually the champ ends up winning. Like, you got to knock the champ out.
Right.
LeBron hasn't knocked the champ out.
I don't know
out.
How you could. How could you be better than what Michael gave you?
Well, he's already missed his opportunity, because, I mean, everyone that loves Jordan will always go back to the fact that Jordan never lost the finals. He's 6-for-6. So the second you lose, unless he wins, unless LeBron, you know, gets the 7 championships, even if he wins 6, he'll have lost. He's already lost champion. He's already lost in the finals. So even if you get to 6,
not only did he lose in the finals, but he had a finals where he was not good.
No, he wasn't good at all. But again, I mean, in order to be considered the greatest of all time, when you start matching up accomplishments, the one thing that Jordan has that LeBron will never have is 6-for-6 in the finals. So unless you get to 7, unless you win 7 championships, even
which
if you get to 6.
Four more now.
Yeah, which is, even if you have 6, the people that love Jordan will say, well, Jordan was 6-for-6, you lost in the finals.
He can get
that
to
7. Wasn't that always the conversation between Brady and Montana?
Oh, yeah.
Like, even when Brady got to 4 championships, they're like, well, Montana never lost. He was 4-for-4.
Yeah, and the point that we all made was like, well, if Tom Brady got to 9 Super Bowls and won 6 of them, why would you hold it against him the fact that he was able to take his team 3 other times where they didn't win it to the biggest game the sport has to offer? Like, that just didn't make any sense.
So if that's the case, then why don't we give more credit to LeBron for going to 8 straight finals?
Well, I think we should. But
I think we do.
But you think we do?
I think we do. I think that's why. I mean, I think that's why Jordan felt pressure, that all of a sudden LeBron James was knocking on the door. A lot of people now, when you start talking about Mount Rushmores, have LeBron James as the second guy on that list.
Yeah, they have him as the second guy, but I think the reason why they won't put him as the top guy is just because of how LeBron James' career unfolded. Like, LeBron James started in Cleveland, and then he had to go to basketball school down in Miami, joined 2 other All-NBA players in order to win his first championship. Had an opportunity to then go back to Cleveland, join another All-NBA player in Kyrie Irving, trade for Kevin Love, and then win another championship. And now he's on the doorstep of winning a championship with his 3rd franchise. And I think that's why Jordan felt the pressure, because when you start talking about a guy winning 3 NBA titles with 3 different franchises, I think it puts him it puts him a little bit closer to Michael Jordan. It does.
Yeah, that's why he put this thing out.
Yeah.
Because LeBron had that unbelievable comeback, down 3-1. They went, won three in a row. They won the championship. And Jordan said, all right, you know what? He's closing in. Let's get this thing out.
Don't forget, LeBron.
People see what James I was.
LeBron James actually verbalized it after that championship. I consider myself the greatest of all time now.
After the one in Cleveland, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, he said it.
When they came back from 3-1.
See, I do not at any point criticize LeBron James for making the decision to leave Cleveland. Because this is not, I mean, this is not tennis or golf. This is a team sport. And sometimes, all the time, you're at the mercy of people making decisions. Now, as bad of a guy as people want to think Jerry Krause was, he was damn good at his job. So he put great talent around Mike, like talent that fit perfectly for Michael Jordan. And then you get Phil Jackson and you have this dynasty. Cleveland was not doing LeBron James any favors.
No.
During his first stint. You want to talk about carrying bad teams? LeBron James was carrying very average teams.
I didn't even know that they were average teams.
No, they were bad teams.
Okay, so they were bad teams. So at a certain point, LeBron James is going to be like, okay, now I'm not the one making these decisions. I'm going to sit here and waste my prime years with these dummies as opposed to now having the opportunity to go, you know, join a team with Dwayne Wade and Pat Riley making decisions. I'm going to go be a part of that.
And we can add Chris Bosh to the mix as well. That sounds like the place for me. And it's South Beach.
It's a no-brainer, man.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer. Anyone would make that decision. I'm going to stick it out here in Cleveland. Come on, man.
Cleveland. Stop. All right, Lou in the truck. Lou, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, guys. Enjoy the show. Love listening to you. My whole thing with this LeBron James, Michael Jordan thing is the fact that LeBron came into the league at 18. His next best player on his team was who? Mo Williams? Who did this guy play with? And, yeah, he went to Miami. He did all that. I hated him during that as a Knicks fan. But I give LeBron a lot more credit, and I think he has more of a chance of becoming the GOAT if he goes and plays five, six more years. How isn't he the GOAT if he plays into his, you know, later 30s and early 40s?
I think we define the GOAT now with how many championships you win and how many appearances you make to win a title. And if he doesn't get to that number that Michael has, and Michael does it in, I don't know, eight less years or whatever, I think that people will still consider Michael to be the greatest of all time.
Different errors, too.
It's about championships, though.
Well, it's about championships, which maybe it shouldn't be because it is a team sport. But, I mean, for Michael Jordan, I mean, he was never not the best player on the six championship teams. I mean, he carried six teams to championships.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think if you really wanted to make a case for LeBron James, you would start really focusing more on, you know, skill set. Who's the better all-around player?
Mm-hmm.
And when it's all said and done and you end up looking up and seeing all-time leaders, I mean, LeBron James, if he sticks around long enough, he could, you know, be the NBA all-time points leader. And you start looking at how many assists he had and how many rebounds he had. I mean, you're talking about, I mean, maybe he'll never be the GOAT, but you may be hard-pressed to ever see anybody for a long time that's as well-rounded as a basketball player. All in. Everything included.
Have we ever seen it? I don't know that we've ever seen something that can do everything the way he can.
I'm with you on that one, Dave. I don't think we've ever seen it.
Now, Michael could, but Michael wasn't a great rebounder and wasn't a great passer. He could do it.
And I don't think Michael had the defensive versatility that LeBron James has. I don't think you could put LeBron James on really any player in the NBA and you call it a huge, huge defensive liability. I don't see that.
Well, especially now. With these lineups going small. I mean, he's 6'9", 265, 270.
Yeah,
he's bigger than Draymond Green, who plays the five.
Who can he defend if he needs to defend somebody?
Anybody.
That's why, Michael Jordan's the greatest of all time. And I don't think LeBron ever gets to that point where he takes that step just because of the championships and everything else. But till the day I'll die, the better comparison, if you want to make comparisons, is LeBron James and Magic Johnson.
Yeah, because his mentality, especially on the offensive side of the court, is more like Magic.
Yeah, mentality, size. Yeah. I mean, you remember the playoff game where Kareem was out and Magic played all five?
Yeah,
he took the tip.
Year.
He took
game
the opening
six
tip.
Of 1980, yep.
I mean, he defended all five positions. And then LeBron, I mean, LeBron James' ability to stay healthy. I mean, the dude is, with how physical he plays, the dude is a specimen, man.
So yeah, Michael Jordan players. Played like all 82 games when he was with the Wizards and he was 40 years old. That's insane.
That's insane, but I think, that's one of those arguments that it's kind of, you adapt to the times, and because now this is load management and everything else, and you have all this advanced, you know, look at baseball. I mean, look at Cal Ripken playing all those consecutive games. There's no chance ever.
No, nobody's going to touch that record.
Never.
Nobody's
going to touch that. You could beg your manager to play. I'm healthy. Skip, I'm healthy. No, no, well, if you break down the numbers here, it shows you, and if you have this one day off that, you know, you'll be this much better the following day. Come on.
He played 2,600 consecutive games.
Ridiculous, dude. That is one of the craziest records of all time.
It's crazy. Insane. You'll never get. I mean, you guys play, if you have a big time season, you play what, 155 now?
We have 4 days off. You just wouldn't be allowed.
Right. I wonder what the longest. I wonder what the record right now is for the most consecutive games played. It's probably not 300, right?
Whew. No, I mean, how many guys are playing all 162?
No, yeah, not a whole lot. Yeah,
2,600. 98.7 ESPN. Stu Leonard's wants to thank all the brave and hardworking heroes during this pandemic. Stu Leonard's has created a first responders gift box with healthcare workers and first responders in mind. If you know a hero who deserves Stu's favorite treat, send us their story at 98.7 FM at ESPN.com or tweet with the hashtag 987Salute. We'll choose 10 winners on Friday, salute each recipient on air, and send them a Stu's gift box. Again, email 98.7 FM at ESPN.com or tweet with the hashtag 987Salute. If you'd like to purchase a gift box to send, head to stusgifts.com for every first responder gift box that they sell. Stu's will donate $25 to the American Red Cross. So that's nice. We can help by giving back a little bit at a time. All right, are you guys ready? Chris, you have to redeem yourself from a slow start to the week.
Yeah, I was bad. I was bad yesterday with that Parcells question. I'm ready to bounce back, though, Dave.
All right, well, let's bring him in. Andy from Merrick, welcome aboard, Andy.
Good morning, guys. It's feeling like a baseball day today. You ready?
Yeah, we're ready.
Ready as I'm ever going to be, Andy.
99, your Yankees. You know Mariano Rivera, of course, is the all-time saves leader for the Pinstripes. But can you tell me who ranks number two?
Number two in saves?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Let me see here. Who would be in that conversation?
Would you like a little help?
Yes, Dave, of course. Of course I'm going to rely on you.
I don't want to jump into it. You take a minute when you start running into trouble.
I'm just trying to think, Dave. It takes a
tip-toe
shifting gears because Andy threw me off with the baseball question. I thought, you know, he usually stays in the same lane with the football stuff. But I'm trying to think about who would be in that conversation.
All right, I'm going to give you a slow hint.
Okay.
Andy, correct me if I'm not right with this. I believe a lefty.
He is a lefty.
Okay. He's a lefty.
Early 80s, throughout the 80s, and I believe, if this is the correct guy, started as a starter.
That would be correct, too.
And then moved to the bullpen. And Rick,
right?
I'm willing to bet he clearly in the Italian-American Hall of Fame.
Oh, I know who it is, Dave. I think I know who it is. Is that one Dave Righetti?
Yes, sir.
All right.
A little prompting, but full credit.
Appreciate it, Dave. I needed that. So you're going to count that, right, Andy?
Absolutely.
Okay, all right.
It's all about the teamwork here.
All right, there we go.
All right, 39. Same question. John Franco, number one, saves all time for the Mets. Who's number two?
I'm going to go with one, Armando Benitez.
Oh, without hesitation, he is correct.
Ah! Yes. Wonderful. Now I'm going to get mine wrong.
No, stop. Come on.
Dave, you brutalized me yesterday with all those answers, so going to bring it a little bit. We mentioned Dave Righetti just a few moments ago.
Mm-hmm.
18 years pitching coach with the San Francisco Giants. Can you tell me the all-time saves leader for said Giants?
Wait, give this to me again now?
Who's the all-time save leader for the San Francisco Giants?
Oh, okay. For the San Francisco Giants?
Yep.
Is it Rob Nen?
that? Your answer or your spitball?
Oh, God. Now I don't know when he does this. Rick, what do you think?
See, I can't tell because, I mean, before when you were just spitballing, like, he would be like, he would just say, that's the answer. Now all of a sudden he's changed his tune a little bit because you're doing so well.
I think it's Rob Nen.
And you would be correct.
Yes.
Rob Nen, 206. Shooter Rob Beck had 199. Nice job, fellas.
Beautiful.
Stay healthy.
We swept the baseball category today.
Appreciate the assist, Dave.
Of course.
Couldn't have done it without you.
Of course. Now, here's an interesting tweet. Joey Bag of Donuts says, hey, guys, once sports start up again, will you continue with the Andy from Merrick segment? I love it. I think it's a great part of the show. I've learned a lot of cool little facts that I never would have known otherwise.
Yeah, I'm on board with it. I like when Andy calls in with
fun.
A trivia question. Yeah.
Especially when we get him right. We look
there we
smart.
Go. There you go.
That's nice. All right. What? I mean, if we went 1 for 10, I don't think we would be so quick to rush back with the questions.
No, you're right. I mean, that's part of it. I mean, it accentuates, especially you. I mean, this accentuates how good you are.
Dave's been hot, man. Rick, did you hear him on Saturday?
Dude, he's been red hot.
Between some of the questions red on Saturday are too much, though.
That's your own fault. That's your producer's fault.
You agree, though, right?
Well, he's just doing it to embarrass you.
Yeah, he's trying to embarrass you.
It's the first nice thing you did was trying to get him Twitter followers. That was the first nice thing you
did. And we did. I got him like 500 followers.
Yeah, you got Linda Cohn tweeting things out. I mean, it's crazy.
Dave, when you came up with that Chris Mullin answer, though, that was unbelievable.
Well, thank you.
I couldn't believe it.
Well,
I thought I actually had you with my stump question.
And I don't even know anything about sneakers.
But you guessed it. You were perfect.
Well, I figured, what was the question?
The question was, what were the Jordans that MJ was wearing when he won his first championship?
Right. Well, I figured that was 91.
Yep.
And he was in the league for 6 or 7 years. So yeah. I went the Jordan 6s.
And you were right. The infrareds. Yeah.
So it was really just kind of an educated guess. All right.
By the way, Canty, by the way, just because, I mean, you have said that your favorite Jordans, Jordan also said his favorite Jordans are the 11s.
They have to be.
Yeah.
The 11 is the best basketball shoe from a style standpoint that was ever made.
Wow. It's a red hot take.
Are you littered with Jordans in your closet, Canty?
No, I don't. But I do have a pair of the 11s, though.
Nice.
I'm not really a gym shoes kind of guy. I'm not a sneakerhead, but I do have those.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.